What does the current portfolio look like right now? What's the cash flow looking like right now in closing?
For the stores that we currently have?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we have 30 locations, and we'll do $36 million. In 2023, we expect to do about $40 million, but we did about $36 million last year. And yeah, we net, I don't know, it depends, but 8 to 10%, something in that range.
Nice.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
What's up, everyone? This is your host, as always, Brian Lubin. I'm going to keep this intro short, sweet, and to the point because I am practicing what I preach, as per usual, as I am sitting here in Lake Tahoe at the GoBundance Retreat. We're doing a mastermind event. It's one of our annual events, and we've got about 300 multimillionaire entrepreneurs here, and we're about to go hit the mountain and snowboard. And after this, we're going to go have our keynote speaker, Tom Bilyeu, who's the founder of Quest Nutrition, sold that for a couple hundred million dollars. So I'm going to go buddy up with him and try to get him on the podcast. But today's episode is one of my favorite episodes that we've had on the show. This is one of those really granular tactical episodes where from minute one to the very end, it doesn't stop. It is just data and just best practices that you would pay thousands and thousands of dollars for to get in a coaching call. And this is none other than my buddy, Brian Beers, who's coming on. He is a multi-generational franchise operator. He's a franchisor. This guy's been doing this in his family for years and years and years. It's in his blood. And this is what he eats, sleeps, and breathes, just like me for podcasting and entrepreneurship. He does franchising. And he talks about why you should use this as a cash flow vehicle to accelerate leaving a W-2. A lot of the questions I ask are from the position of somebody with a current day job looking to exit. And what Brian calls this is a business in a box, essentially. So it takes all of the risk and uncertainty of starting a brand new business, and it kind of mitigates that risk because you're buying the playbook, you're buying the brand, the marketing, the franchisor that you're buying all this from has already got all that established because Brian owns tire shops from Midas, and then he just does the fulfillment at his stores. So I think this is a great opportunity and a great cash flow vehicle for anybody to use. And we talk about the pros, we talk about the cons, and we talk about the cash flow, more importantly, in today's episode. So stick around to the entire show. It is fantastic. Before we get into it, if you want to join the cool kids on the block, Action Academy community, check out the link in the show description or check us out at theactionacademy.co. If you are a doer, a mover, a shaker, and an action taker, baby, you need to join the group. It is the only mastermind group that will kick your tail out if you are not participating. I have a 60-day action clause where if you are in the group and you're not participating, you're not commenting, you're not engaging, you're not making the calls, you're out of there, buddy. I don't need your money. I need killers. And I want to be surrounded by killers. And that's the environment that we're creating for our family. So if you want to join, you know where to find us. Show description, mash it. Without any further ado, Brian Beers. All right, Mr. Brian Beers, welcome back to the Action Academy, man. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I feel honored now that this podcast is big and famous.
Oh, yeah. I can only get as big as business as Beers. So step by step. But you and I both kind of started our podcasting journey at around similar marks and around similar times. And in the very beginning, we were both figuring out our voice, our branding, our messaging that we wanted to portray to the audience for both of our shows and for both of our brands. And now I feel we've gotten a really good idea of the messaging that we want to portray. So I want to go into kind of your transition from being somebody that was an owner of auto shops and an owner of these franchises to now creating the brand and the personality around franchisees and franchising in general. Can you kind of walk us through that transition and how you've gone about building that brand?
Yeah, so I guess the core of it is that I've been in franchising's like in my blood. My family's been in franchising for over 45 years. if you count my dad's uncle, or it's 60 years or something. It's been in our family forever. So I've grown up with it. And yeah, so I, for those who don't know, in my backstory, we run 30 automotive shops here in the Philly and Jersey area. And really, we took it over from like a smaller six location company to now 30. We have 200 employees, about $36 million in revenue. And we'll grow. We're going to continue to grow this year. We're adding new locations. We're adding revenue, building the team out. And I've had a lot of success in the business. We've also started two other franchises. I bought into them that both be considered big failures, in my opinion. We lost a bunch of money. And in retrospect, I would have done it a little bit differently. And think franchising is great. I think you can build tremendous wealth with it. I think you can create whatever lifestyle you want to eventually get to. Franchising is a great way to get there. And so anyway, now I've pivoted to, I'm pretty active on Twitter and my podcast. Now the message shifted to really not only share my story, but to teach other people, how did they do this? Like, how do you find a franchise? Who does it fit? What are the pros and the cons? What's the best way to grow within one, right? You get your foot in one, and then how do you grow? And ultimately, how do you scale a business to be whatever size you want it to be? No one, not everyone's got to be the size that we're at. Some people can live a great life and build, have everything they want at a much smaller, easier to manage company. And there's other people that want 500 locations, totally possible. So anyhow, I really enjoy teaching people about it. Not a lot of people are in the space or talking about it. And if they are, almost none of them have the experience that I do in terms of like actually running a franchise business. A lot of the guys that talk about it, maybe they had one or two or smaller. I'm probably one of the top experience-wise as well.
I would completely agree with that. Coming from somebody that owns real estate, you own stocks, you own franchises, can you talk a little bit about the asset class in general and why somebody should franchise? Maybe give a pros and cons list for somebody that's listening. Yeah. Because if we think back to the people that are listening to the show right now, maybe some of them own rental properties, maybe some of them own multifamily, maybe some of them own a laundromat or a car wash. This is the format that we follow for this passive income generation to earn our freedom. Why franchising? Why this method? What are the pros and cons of this?
Yeah, so the franchising, there's a spectrum, right? And so in many different ways, a spectrum in terms of, I don't know, like I mentioned before, the size that you want it to be. It can be a single unit person who bought themselves a job, right? They have some freedom. Their income is directly tied to the amount of work they put in. Someone who builds an executive type business is like where I'm at, where you build a team, right? My time is less correlated to our success because I built it up. And then finally is like the investor, the board, right? Somebody who's really putting their capital to use in order to open up locations, and a team really runs all the day to day. And then obviously it's like infinitely scalable. And it really depends. Like buying a franchise is not buying real estate. Like buying into a franchise, you're buying a business, right? You're starting a business, right? And a business requires work. It is not easy, right? There are definitely franchises that lend themselves to have more benefits to people that want to take a less active role, right? We may call it semi-absentee, or I like to call it kind of executive, where it basically means you can set the vision, you hire the right people. You still got to hold them accountable though, right? It's not the type of thing that you just buy and then, oh yeah, it just like prints money for me.
But that doesn't really exist anywhere. Even that's a facade in real estate.
People say, oh, real estate's passive, but it's not really not. Like you got to do a lot of work unless you invest in like syndications. So just keep that in mind as a footnote here or whatever. But yeah, then some of the pros and cons. So the biggest pro is you get like a business in a box. So you don't have to go out and reinvent a wheel. You don't have to come up with this new problem. And maybe you're not like the most creative person. That's okay. Like your job is not to be creative. Your job is to identify that, hey, there's a need in this market for this product or service. And this company has already developed a solution. They wrote the playbook. They wrote everything I need to do. And my job is to follow the playbook, right? Whether that's, I'm going to do this marketing, we're going to do the things in this certain manner, right? That is the pro. It's a business in a box. And as a franchisee, you really focus 95% of your time on operations, which is driving. How do we drive sales? How do we convert those sales by following a process, or convert those leads into customers? How do we make sure we deliver on our promise and make sure everybody has a good experience? That's 95% of your job. The franchisor takes care of all the marketing for the most part. Like you pay a percentage of your sales into this fund, and then the franchisor will, they're the ones that build out the website, that build out the brand, that, you know, change the brand up. Like Midas, we've changed like the mascot of the brand multiple times since I've been involved. Like they handle all that stuff. They're the ones that'll shop on TV and get you on and make the videos and get you on YouTube and SEO and Pandora and all this stuff that like I know nothing about. I really don't care about. All I want is I want my phone to ring. Like I don't care how they make the phone ring. I want the phone to ring. And then I want my team to go in and be really good at taking that phone call and turn it into a visit, turn that visit, turn it into sale, make sure they have a good experience so they come back. And then it's a cycle. And so you get the business in the box, you get the playbook, you get the lead gen, and then it's like the systems, the processes, the partnership. Like, you've got a community, or your bigger communities. You join a franchise, you are like instantly part of a brand new community, other franchisees who are all just like you. They're in the same spot that you were at.
Figuring it out.
They all want to help each other too. Franchisees are more than willing to help other franchisees because, like, the stronger you get as a group and the more sales all of you generate, the stronger the brand comes, right? The more money that has available to spend on marketing, the more respected a brand comes, the more locations, the higher multiple that they could sell it at. So like, you've got these like instant partners to help hiring processes and best sales processes and pricing and compensation and like all this stuff. And I got a tons of friends in Midas who we text each other all the time with questions, problems, solutions, ideas. And for me, like, I love having that. I don't want to be alone trying to figure it out all myself. Like, I want people to help me and I'm going to help in return. So.
And that is another, that's another part of real estate investing is like, you do have the communities out there, right? But for the most part, you have a lot of people that are lone wolfing real estate investing. Maybe they read the books, maybe they listen to this podcast and they have a couple of properties, but there's not that community attached to it necessarily. So I really like that proponent of it because you can immediately go in where it's a win-win situation and everyone's not gatekeeping. Everyone's very open and fluid with the information share and the value exchange. I really like that. So for somebody, I'm putting all this in, I know it's apples to oranges, and this is more of a business conversation, and we're going to get more into the advanced and higher level business metrics in a second, but I just really want to lay the groundwork for somebody that's listening that may be unfamiliar with how all of this works in general. So I like what you said about the degrees of passivity, right? We have levels of passivity. It's a spectrum. It's not A or B. There's a lot of gray area in between. So somebody buys a rental property. It prints out 200 to 500 net cash flow per month. People buy an Airbnb. Maybe it prints out $2,000 to $3,000 a month. People buy a laundromat. Maybe it's another $2,000 to $3,000. What is the normal return somebody can expect from buying a franchise? And just as a rule of thumb coming in for somebody that has a W-2 job, maybe, how intensive do they have to be to get this thing off of the ground? I know you're going to say it depends, but we can expand on that.
Yeah, it depends. So I'll give you a range. So,
stalker.
For example, in an automotive repair business, right, it's going to cost $250, could be up to $400,000. Really, even that depends in our case on, are you outfitting from scratch? Are you buying like an existing or rebranding?
Say buying an existing and rebranding.
Yeah.
Just for
so
the
I
sake
buy
of
an
example.
Independent shop. It's got lifts. It's got compressors. I got to put signs on it. I got to upgrade a bunch of stuff. I probably got to fix the roof. And I'd probably spend 200. Yeah, that's like a 200, 250 to get that thing looking pretty good that I'm like proud of it. That thing should be able to make 100 grand a year, 150 grand a year on average. Our range is from, we have stores that lose 100 grand that are recently purchased that we need to fix. We have stores that make 300,000, 400,000, and but on average about 100 grand on a $250,000 investment.
Okay, so just to clarify, this is 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 net into owner pocket, not gross revenue?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. That's a no-brainer. It's a no freaking brainer,
yeah,
but
it's
man.
A business, right? It's a business. No,
it is
side,
a business.
There are businesses you could get into a cleaning franchise is like a great example that people can get. It's a little bit more passive in ways, and we could talk about what makes it passive. A lot of those you can get into them for, let's call it 100 to 150,000, like all in it costs to start up one of these franchises. You get like a territory. And those, you could probably make a similar number. Maybe it's 60 the first year, maybe it's 80 the next year, maybe it's, you can get up to 120,000. There's some that do more. Now they're gonna have less sales than like an automotive shop, but their margins are gonna be much higher because they don't have the overhead, they don't have all the CapEx and all the equipment. And so that one could be, you could get 100% return on your cash, and it's running a business still. And they vary, but like buying a franchise, you can get over 50% of franchises cost $250,000 or less. You can finance them. We can get into all, there's 10 different ways you can finance a franchise. But returns, it's a business. So for people to say, I want to make a lot more than 100 grand, own 10 of them, own 30 of them, right? Like the best part of franchise is the duplicate. It can be duplicated, right? You can buy new locations, you can open up more territories, and it's plug and play. Like, do you use the same point of sale software, you have the same uniforms, you follow the same like processes, you have the same marketing, and whether you're opening them or buying them, like we, a lot of our growth has been through buying existing, and it's literally plug and play. Like it is the employees on day one, like it's business as usual. Like that first week, their paycheck comes from a different bank account, but like we're following the same core process that allows someone to grow very quickly versus if I was buying independent shops, for example, or you were in an independent HVAC company or landscaping company or whatever it is, and you want to buy other independents to do this like similar roll-up strategy, every single one you buy, because it's independent, is going to be unique. They're going to use a different point of software, if any. They're going to not going to have these systems in place. They're not going to have the stuff. And so you're going to want to put them in place, right? People don't like change. So now you're going in, you bought this new thing. You're going to tell them, hey, I know you've been doing this thing for 10 years, but we're going to start doing it this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to learn my point of system. You're going to learn this. We're going to change your pricing. We're not going to do X, Y, and Z services anymore because they don't fit with my business model. And then you're going to lose like half the staff because they're like, this is not how we do it. And maybe whatever. But in a franchise, especially when you're buying existing ones or even opening new ones, like the playbook's set. There is some little variability, obviously, in how things are done, but like 90% of it is the same. And so that's what makes it duplicatable. So even if you have a business that it only makes 50,000 a location or whatever, like Subway's don't make that much money. They make 40, let's call it 40 grand a location, but their overhead's very low. They're very stable. Like it's not too seasonal and the guys can own 10 of them relatively easily and bringing in 400 grand a year with not this huge variance and fluctuation. So
yeah. Anyway. All right, man, that's fantastic. So a cool thing about this show is none of this is easy. None of the stuff we talk about is easy. And I don't think that people that are listening to this are looking for an easy fix or an easy solution because they wouldn't listen to this podcast. So the people that do listen to this show take massive levels of action. I want to punctuate what you said there, and I want to go into a little bit of a framework, and then I want to get into how we go about evaluating franchises, how we go about purchasing franchises, and then what levers we can pull to manage a franchise. So first, to punctuate what you said, essentially you say that you can put down $250,000 to get a franchise, and then $250,000 is buying $100,000 to $200,000 of recurring cash flow net to you as the owner. So you're taking one lump sum of cash and then you're just duplicating that and recycling that over and over again. So that's a freaking no-brainer. When it comes to the levers of control is what I've thought about.
Yep.
If you think about your W-2 position, ladies and gentlemen that are listening, if you're in a corporate position, what are your levers of control for income generation? You can work more hours, you can do better and hope for a promotion. Maybe you get 10% more. Maybe you're in a sales position and you pull some levers to do more prospecting, more presenting, and you can increase your commission. In real estate, you can buy distressed properties. You can renovate them. You can fix them up. There's some degrees of control. When I'm looking at what you're saying, what's attractive to me is not only the cash on cash return, but also you have a lot of different levers that you can pull to control how much income that you're generating, because now we're having a business conversation. And if you're a good operator, you can kick the ass of anyone that's a terrible operator, which I would imagine is the majority. Is that spot on?
That is accurate. And a lot of what makes a good franchisee is a good manager. It's a good manager of people. So if someone has a W-2 job now and they're in a role where they hire people, they identify talent, they can bring them in, they can sell them the vision, right? They can train them and this is what I want you to do. They can hold them accountable, which means they're going to follow up to say, hey, I asked you to do this thing. Did you do it or not? They celebrate successes when the team does a good job, right? They discipline when they need to. If someone is good at those things and does those things now, like, they are unlimited possibilities, because that is what it is to be a franchisee. Like that is the majority of what we do. For the most part, most franchises, including mine, are in the people business, right? We just happen to fix cars. You could be in the people business and you just happen to clean houses or do home healthcare or spray mosquitoes or drop off dumpsters or sell popsicles. We're in the people business, because if we weren't in the people businesses are hard, thus why they're franchised versus
correct.
If you're just doing product, like you're just selling product, you're selling software. Walmart doesn't need franchises because it's a retail business. Like they can interchange, right? The people that stock the shelves and the check people out, right? Manage it. And it all pretty much runs the same, right? So for the most part, a lot of franchises have a service component to them because they need local owners. They need people who care about finding good people, who hold them accountable, who try to reduce turnover, right? Who want to celebrate success, all that stuff. So
I love that.
And someone's good at those things, that's the key. Like you may think of, I have no business experience. I don't know how to run a business. But if you can manage people, the franchisor will help with a lot of the other stuff in terms of 101. Some of them do bookkeeping. Some franchisors do your bookkeeping. Some of them help with like resources for processing payroll. Like a lot of stuff that people don't know how to do and they've never done it. It's really not that hard. And
yeah. And when we talk about real estate, we talk about driving for dollars, right? And then when we talk about franchises, there's so many franchises, I'd say probably 80% plus, that don't even pick up the damn telephone.
I know.
Yeah. So the opportunity here, ladies and gentlemen, is insane. Because think about this. You can buy a franchise at a multiple of revenue, which we'll get into that very shortly, how to evaluate franchises. So you can get one and you can look at this franchise and be like, okay, they're doing X amount of revenue. I'm going to buy them for this price. And you know that you can immediately go in and input your systems and input, change the customer service, start answering the phones, do a little bit, throw it online. A lot of these places don't even have websites and stuff. And you can just make those simple changes and immediately increase the revenue, increase the valuation and the multiple, and then skyrocket your net worth. Holy crap. So talk about this. Let's talk about how do you evaluate a franchise, and what are you looking for in these deals, like your distressed real estate of the franchise world?
Yeah. So there's two kind of avenues here. One is, you're buying existing franchises. The other way is you're developing, you're opening new ones, right?
We'll do the entire conversation based off of acquiring other existing ones.
So a word of caution prior to that is it's very hard to buy existing ones. Because,
okay, then never mind. I'm talking out of my
head. We should talk about both. Why? Because franchisees want to sell to other franchisees. It's easy.
Very fair.
It's much easier. I'm able to buy so many because I'm a franchisee. If someone wants to sell and I'm in their footprint, they know I'm I'm gonna deliver, right? I'm gonna score the touchdown versus you sell. You list your business on BizBuySell and you get all these rando people, and then the franchisor has to approve of them, so they have to be financially qualified. You have to disclose all this information, send them tax returns. It's like selling anything else, right? But at the end of the day, like, they have to go through training. And what if at the 5-yard line before they sign all the docs and do all the stuff, they say, hey, this thing isn't for me? Or the franchisor, like, I've heard of franchisors after they go through training be like, this guy's like an idiot, we don't want him in. And then they can kill the deal. But they're not going to kill the deal for me because I'm an existing franchisee. And as long as obviously I'm like in good standing with the franchisor and I pay my bills. So for a lot of people, they want to buy existing. It's really hard to get the first one. And so a lot of times what I see people is they open the first one from scratch, right? So they develop the first one, and then all you need is one. All you need is one to have your foot in the door, and now you're part of the community. And then if you want, you could do an acquisition for everyone after that.
So what does that process look like? Right now, I'm a guy or a girl, and I'm sitting here in my corporate job. I'm making maybe $120,000, $130,000. I've got a couple Airbnbs under my belt. And I want to open up a franchise. Walk me through this process.
Yep. Yeah. So I think the first thing is, the most important thing is deciding what your role is going to be. And there's this spectrum I talked about, right? So for some people, they are going to be like not very much involved, right? Where they are, maybe it's, then there's two ways you can do that. One is you hire an operator who's going to really run the day-to-day of the business. The other way is there are some that you can operate a little more ad hoc, depending if you have flexibility in your work schedule. There are some franchises that you can run. Maybe you're the lead like sales person on it, where you're handling the calls, you're closing the deals, and then it's going over to your team to handle. And it's really knowing how much time you're going to allocate towards the business. And if you say, hey, I can 20 hours a week, like I'm going to lead the team, but I'm not going to be the person like in there every single day. Yeah, that's, you got to figure out that. Franchisors need to know that. The other part of it is, if you're going to hire a GM to run it, like you're going to have to pay them 50 grand or 40 grand or whatever. And such a huge amount of like profit and kind of risk that you're going to be taking on. And so it's really deciding what level you're at. And so from there, you decide your role. After that, it's let's say someone's role is they don't want to hire a GM. Right. Cause they're afraid of the risk of bringing on that employee. Okay. For example, there's a great popsicle franchise that I like, and it's like an ice cream. It's basically an ice cream. It's like a fancy ice cream truck that sells gourmet popsicles, blueberry cream cheese, like whatever, then like dipped cold brew, whatever. Got all these fancy flavors. People down in like Austin would love them.
Yeah. They just make white people sweat. Just like, oh my God, look at this flavor.
Exactly. Margarita and mango, whatever, like all these fancies. So anyway, it's a kind of business. It costs like, whatever, 60 grand or less. You can get into it, you get payments on the truck and stuff. And so the role is like, You buy these popsicles for a dollar and you sell them for $5, right? You make them $4 a popsicle. And then they help you get into these events. So then you get scheduled to go to all these outdoor festivals and music concerts and like high school football games and college football games. And you can do wholesale to other local places. And either you can go to the events or you hire kids for a couple bucks an hour and they're going out and selling a couple hundred popsicles at a time. Or you find a retailer and you can wholesale a bunch of popsicles. And so thing, you get into it for 60K and maybe you can making it. So it's making 60, 70, 80, maybe even 100,000 if you can really start cranking it. Obviously, if you're in Texas and it's warmer climate, you have a longer, much longer year-round season than if you're in Philly. But there is something for everyone, depending on how much time they want to put into it. That's the first thing.
What's a good resource for somebody like, and this is really cool that we're having this conversation because I'm completely ignorant to all of this. So off the top of my head, I can't think of what franchise I would want to open up because we're saying, so for the sake of the example, we're beginning with the first one. In my mind, as well, where I'm at in business, I would immediately underwrite hiring an operator, like where I'm at right now and where you are. Like, yep. We wouldn't be doing this ourselves. But yeah, for somebody, I'm doing the sake of the example for somebody that's maybe like really trying to exit this corporate job and they're really trying to get their freedom as fast as possible. Where would you recommend, like, where do they even find the ideas for these different franchises that are even possible? Because maybe they're not like, okay, I know about Subways. I know about gas stations. I know about Taco Bells. I know about tire shops. Like, besides Biz by Sell, are there any resources that you can recommend for somebody going through and looking at what's out there and available to begin?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on my website, Brian Beers. Now, so that's what I help people do now is this, where currently I work one-on-one with people, really working on developing a lot of content and a community all around this. Cause this is the biggest problem, right? Is there's 3,000 franchises out there. Like, how do you pick one that's right for you? And there's a whole world of franchise consultants is one of the avenues. Became one and joined this network because I have so many people coming to me through, primarily through Twitter and through my podcast, wanting that help. And all franchise consultants are going to be pretty similar in this way. They have this portfolio, like in the one I'm part of, we have 700 different brands. And so it's a big one. And a lot of brand names, a lot of great ones. And so like I would ask you a bunch of questions in terms of like, how much liquidity you have? How much total investment are you looking for? Are you looking for, I have a whole list of industries we would look at, right? Childcare, home healthcare, cleaning, auto repair. Like there's a whole bunch of them, right?
Sure. Home
services. And then based on all these things and what I think you would be looking for, I can put all that kind of into this database and then it can come back with, here's a whole bunch of franchises, right? That could fit it. And the way I work and a lot of the consultants work is similar. We're there. They're then doing territory checks to see, all right, you're in Austin. You want to open up X, Y, and Z, a service-based business. What's available? And then we can quickly see what's available, what's not available. And then at the end, come back to you and present 4 or 5 different options. If you like them, set up intro calls with the franchisors and then walk through the process of just helping you explore it.
That's freaking awesome.
In the corner. So,
yeah, in full transparency, like for me, once again, like this is me selfishly. I wouldn't even care how much you would charge for that. I'll just be like, okay, dude. Yeah. Walk me through. Help me out.
Yep.
Cause you don't know what you don't know.
Yep. And anyway, there's like Franchise Gator. There's a bunch of other websites out there too. If someone starts exploring, a lot of times people put in requests for information, they end up getting to a franchise consultant. The problem with the industry, to be totally honest, is like some people get into it, become a quote franchise consultant. They have like zero experience actually Gotcha. Running a franchise. They might have a ton of experience selling them, but they like my competitive advantage is I know this thing inside and out. So that's why I'm pretty successful in helping people find something they love and not just something that's like convenient.
Very cool. Sweet. Let's jump into the valuations right now. So let's jump into how, when you're looking at these different franchises. So now we've gone from deciding that we want to do franchising and now we've found a franchise. We're looking at a couple of different P&Ls for just your sake of what you do. We'll just do like tire shops and auto shops. So when you're looking at auto shops to buy, how are you evaluating these businesses? So I know how I have a general understanding of how you do this, but it'd be really helpful to break it down.
So let's say you're already in, you're in a franchise, right? Because if you're just buying one, the franchisor tells you what it costs to get in as part of the process. They'll give you a range. It costs whatever, 100 to 200 or whatever, 200 to 300. They give you a range.
And then when you're beginning, just real quick. So when you're is that something that you can do any creative financing on when you're starting your own original one? Or is that something where you're just like 200, 250K, you need to have that cash liquid, throw it down, or can you do seller financing on something if you're beginning it from scratch?
Yeah. So let's get into that. Yeah. So there's 10 different ways I'm just going to pull them up so I don't forget them all here, that you can get financing on a franchise. And so you got cash, right? That's whatever. So let's say it's 250K. You got 250K in cash. You pull out of checkings or savings. A lot of people don't have that, right? And so then it limits them to
broke.
Lower cost They're franchises.
Broke people, right? Man. Don't and got 250K say, hey, on you? Get out of here.
Right. What does Grant Cardone say? If you're not making 400K, you're like a failure.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So we got that, right? And there's downsides. Even if you had the cash, there's downsides. Like you might be able to get a better return somewhere else and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Number two, you can hit your HELOC, right? So if you've got a house, personal or investment property, you've got equity in it, it's very easy. It's lowest cost. It's interest only. And the real estate guys know this. You might be able to pull 50, 60, 100K out of a HELOC, right? Similarly, you could do stock margin loans, right? So you've got stocks. A lot of brokerages will allow you to get up to 50% loan against your stocks. The problem with that, obviously, if the value drops, you might have to put some cash in with a margin call. If people have life insurance, you can get loans against cash value. And there's actually a way of doing a 401k rollover to start it. That's called a ROBS. So basically, you have a 401k with your W-2. As long as you have a 401k and you're quitting your job. So you're quitting your job, but you get to roll over a 401k. And you have to use like an intermediary, and it's kind of like a 1031 kind of deal. But basically, you can start a new corporation. The corporation has a retirement plan. That 401k goes into that retirement plan, which then that cash can then be used to fund the business. And you can fund the franchise.
That's with a traditional 401k?
With a 401k, yeah, you can roll it.
Where do the profits get distributed? Where does the income get distributed? Because I know if you do that with real estate, then the cash flow goes back into the retirement vehicle.
No, so how it works is the shares are owned. I don't know. The 401k buys shares in the company, and then that's how you get the cash.
Got it.
It owns some shares in the company. And yes, there are some rules around it. There's companies that specialize in this thing.
Okay, cool. We can move on. So what was that called? ROBS?
It's possible. It's called a rollover business startup, ROBS, ROBS.
Cool.
So those are all kind of like the self-funded options, right? That you're using either cash or like equity that you have in either your life, your stocks, your house, whatever. On other people's money, some franchises off in-house financing. So they may say the franchise fee, which we can go into some of the fees and stuff. A franchise fee could be 40 grand and they could say, hey, some will say, hey, you got to pay us. Others will say, pay us 20K and then 20K over X amount of months. You might be able to get into $0 down and spread it out. So that's always interesting. They also might do it for equipment too. If the franchisor is like, you're paying the franchisor to outfit something, they may offer a predefined in-house financing program. You can also get equipment loans. There's a number of vendors that'll do unsecured personal loans if you got good credit, it's higher interest, obviously higher fees. You're not putting up any collateral and they might give you 50 grand, 60 grand, 100 grand, depending on what you make. And finally, SBA, right? SBA, you can get a 7(a) loan that will fund up to 70% of a startup franchise. And so that includes working capital, that includes startup, like the franchise fee, you know, all the other stuff. And so a lot of people do that route and you can stack them, right? So you could say, oh, I got 25K in cash. I'm going to hit 25K for my HELOC. I'm going to get an SBA loan for 150K. And then friends and family, maybe I can raise some money from friends or family and give them some sort of return on it. So yeah, there's tons of different ways to be creative. The main advice is don't overextend yourself. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Sometimes it takes more time to build a business's sales than you expect. And you want to have cash on the side to be able to support it. Like running out of cash is like the number one reason businesses fail. So
yeah,
be conservative. Fair. Don't go crazy. You can always add more units too. Like it's very easy, like I said up front to add them, but you don't want to overcommit and spend all your money in the beginning before you have this, you've proved it out. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And then when we go back to the cash on cash return conversation, like how I would view this is doing the SBA, doing the seller finance, doing some type of creative structure so that you can be able to have as low amount of cash in as possible. So talk about the fees. Talk about the franchise fees.
So this is like the cons, right? So we talked a lot about the pros of why franchising is awesome. A lot of the fees and why it's maybe not as awesome are fees. So you're going to have the big one is they're going to charge an initial franchise fee up front. So it could be 30K, it could be 40, 50, 60. Okay. Some of them, if it's a territory based one, charge you based on how big the territory is. So if you're buying a bigger territory, you're paying more. It's usually on a per population calculation, but on average 30 to 60K. And that buys you a certain amount of time. It could be 10 years. It could be 15 years. It could be 20 years that you have the rights to operate the business in that area. You're also going to have royalties. So most franchises charge a percentage of sales. anywhere. Most charge anywhere from like 5 is on average, 5% of sales. Some charge a little bit more, some charge a little bit less. Some do tiered structures. It all depends. But let's call it like Midas charges 5%. But we do $1 million in a month or whatever for our business, a couple stores, whatever it is, we're going to pay $50,000 that month to the franchisor. That is going to go to A, their profit center, B, the support. Like they use that money to pay for their field support and run the business. So you got royalties. The other half of that is advertising. So most an advertising that is normally very similar to whatever they charge in royalties. So Midas, okay, for example, also charges 5% of that. But that money, so we got another 50 grand that's going into an ad fund. And then ad fund could fund some DMA, some SE, some search engine optimization, could get us on YouTube and MLB playoffs and all that other stuff. And in terms of the downside is you don't have much control over that ad fund money. It's like they get to spend it however they want. And then if you want more local control, it's out of pocket on you. And when I look at a franchise, so some people say, oh, 10%, that's like a ton. I wouldn't spend that or it's too much money. I look at it as you got to spend money in marketing either way. In advertising, sure, leads. So if you say either way, I'm going to spend 5%, which is a pretty like standard reasonable number. So then it's really the 5% that you're paying in royalties. Is that worth it? And the question is, do you get enough support and training that makes it worth it? And for me, like I can open up a brand new store in a brand new location and I can be profitable by month 3 because people Midas, they're coming in. If I was Brian's Tire and Auto, like there's no way that would happen. And then it's the community aspect and all these other features that you don't have to figure this stuff out. So for me, it's worth 5% of the sales to do that.
So there's a quote that comes to mind from that. And one of our buddies, Chris Benson, actually told me this quote, and I definitely agree with it, where he talks about true profit, right? So profit is revenue minus expense, but then like true profit is revenue minus expense minus headaches. So for this, I view this and I say, okay, so I make 10% less, but my headaches are substantially reduced. I think it's a no-brainer.
I can talk too, just real quick. We talked about the fees. We should also talk about some of the other downsides, sure, of people in this. The big one is lack of, let's call it independence, right? So like you're buying the business in the box, which is the pro. The con is you got to stay within the box for the most part, right? And you may have, like for me, I wanted to try opening up a smaller footprint store. I want to try a gas station store here in the Northeast. We have tons of little gas stations. They have 3 bays. I figured, hey, let's put a Midas shop in this little 3-bay thing. And we get some, we wouldn't run the gas station though. Someone else runs it. We're just renting the bays. I thought it was a great idea. And they said, nope. They denied the location, said, we don't have any of those. We're concerned about the liability and of the image and all this stuff. And like, I had to let go of the idea. And
because they just slapped your wrist and said, no.
Because they said, nope, can't do it. We're not going to agree with this site because it's outside of the box. Right now, they said if it didn't have active gas and it's just a small footprint store, we probably approve that. But they didn't like the gas component. They didn't like the retail convenience store kind of component of it. And you try to push the limits as much as you can. But at the end of the day, they want the things to fit with them. That was something that I would think is a big one. And also, like, they could potentially limit growth. So say you're like really aggressive and you want to grow and you want to open up all these locations. And some of them will say, if maybe you've got, I have this painting franchise I'm aware of, and it, like you might have 2 territories and you want to buy 2 more. They want to make sure that both territories that you have are like hitting their metrics and that they're doing well. And if one of them is floundering, not making any money and you're not really spending any time on it, they could deny the acquisition or the future like openings because they said you're not even getting the one you have already growing and now you're going to take on 2 more. Like, what are you doing? Go get that one fixed first.
That makes sense though.
And it does. Like in a business sense, it makes sense. For me, as I was the franchisor, I'd probably do the same thing because it's, yeah, now your focus is going to be even more diluted. But for that franchisee, of course,
well, they're a shit franchisee.
But you got to be aware of that, right? So that, your fair ability to grow, like someone else has got to punch your ticket to get there. On the flip side, and the positive thing is they bring me deals. Like I've been brought multiple deals to buy from the franchisor because they had a business meeting with them and they say, hey, I'm ready to retire. Or I want to sell. How does it work? And they say, hey, let me go talk to Brian. If he's interested, I'll make the introduction. And they bring it to me and I say, this is great. And we do the deal. And so they can bring you deals and they can also cut them off from you. The moral of the story is if you're a good operator, they want you to succeed. If you're better than average and, you know, you have good relationships and you do a good job, like you have this whole power behind you. And if you don't, like that power is pushing you in that other direction, right?
But yeah, the way I view it is like a ship with a massive sail and you've got this massive headwind behind you, like just blowing into the sail, propelling you in the right direction. But if you've got holes in the sail, you're not going to be successful. Yep. So what are some areas that you completely messed up on when you were first getting into this? Now, I know that this is a little tongue in cheek and a little caveat because there's nuance to it, because you were raised in this. You had your father own a bunch.
So we had the two others. I'll talk about the two others. We had two other franchises that we started in 2013 and 2020 that were outside of automotive. One of them was an automotive parts business. The other one was a truck washing business. And I don't know, I guess it was naivety to think that, hey, we can open this thing up and we can put a manager in place and it'll just sales will grow. And it'll just like we treated it as a side passive thing. And I think in reality, like sales grew, but we never grew to being profitable. Like we never grew to the point that it was easy. And I think it takes a lot of work to get the plane off the ground to really accelerate it. And I was involved in the beginning, but then didn't really get it. And then it never got up to the altitude that it should. And I think it was, I don't know if it was ego or just passion or whatever it was, but like I lost interest in it. And then it's harder to get out than when you have a business that doesn't make money, because who's going to buy it? Who's going to buy your problem? And that was the biggest mistake, is I think I thought it was going to be too easy and I wouldn't have to personally invest as much of my time as I actually did. Now, if it was my only thing and I didn't have Midas and I was 100% in both those businesses, I would have made them successful. Like I have no doubt that both of them would have been fine. It's just, I didn't invest the time and then thought I could do well. And so going forward for us, it's like that. For us, it's the operator. If I don't have the time, but maybe we've got the money, we've got the expertise, like we've got a business model that we like. And if we can find somebody who could be a partner with us, then that's perfect, because he can invest the time. He can have some skin in the game. He can be a franchisee, right? Too, like with us. And then we can be there as the coach, as the advisor, and help him see all the issues. I think for us, that's what I learned, is that if your time's like diluted, right? And the more things you take on, the more things you say yes to, the more dilution you get. And for me, it was like having multiple brands that I was personally like in charge of versus having partners who really could be in charge of it. And their time's 100% focused, and I'm more in an executive board member seat, if you will.
Yeah. And I like how you position it right now. So what does the current portfolio look like right now? What's the cash flow looking like right now in closing?
For the stores that we currently have?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have 30 locations and we'll do 36 million. In 2023, we expect to do about 40 million, but we did about 36 million last year. And we net, I don't know, it depends, but 8 to 10%, something in that range.
Nice. Dude, thank you so much for coming on, man. This has been freaking awesome. I've loved watching your journey, and I've loved watching you progress and getting way smoother with delivery. And dude, this is insane to think about how this episode, like, and how you and I even conversate, and how your brand is, and how everything, like, now to a year ago, just from putting in reps on podcasting, it's insane. And that's just a testament. Where can people find you to learn more about this if they're interested, if they need your help to pick out a franchise, to scale their franchises? Where can they reach you?
Yeah, the best is my website, brianbeers.com. From there, we'll find links to, got this course and this community I'm building to teach people a lot of what we talked about today, which is like intro to franchising. Like, what's all the things I need to know to decide, is franchising right for me? So it's that decision point from zero to signing the paperwork, right? And so there's a ton that go into that, and the royalties and the legal structure and how do you build out financial model, all this stuff. And so I've got some great education around that. And then more importantly, it's the community. Like, you've got a great community. I'm part of it. And it's live calls with me to determine, to answer questions, to bounce ideas, or we bring in franchisors to pitch their business. And then we can ask questions live and determine, hey, is this something I like? Is this something I don't? It's a journey to learn about it, right? And it's a huge commitment. It's 10 or 20 year contract that you're signing, that obviously you can like sell and get out of it, but you're still signing it. And so you really want to make sure like you love it, and you got to get educated on it. The more educated you are, the more confident you will have in your decisions. And yeah, brianbeers.com, you can find that stuff off. I'm pretty active on Twitter, is my main like median. You can find me there. And I also have a podcast, Business with Beers, 2 episodes a week. One I talk about on just general business. I bring on authors. We talk about growing, scaling businesses. And then I have one on Fridays that's Franchise Fridays. And that's about franchising. So I do solo episodes there. I bring on franchisors, franchisees, and just that one's focused around them. So.
Sweet, brother. I love it. So now everybody go check out brianbeers.com. Check out Business with Beers podcast. And with that, on this podcast, this has been Brian and Brian with the Action Academy podcast, signing off.
All right.
Hey, real quick, if you're still listening to today's episode, I'm assuming you got value from it. So I need your help specifically. My two-year vision with the show is to help over 1 million people do what they want, when they want, with who they want, and I can only do that with your help. There are two main ways that a podcast grows. One is through ratings and reviews, and the other is word of mouth. If you could please leave me a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as send this to one or two friends that you think would get value from it, we can reach the people that we're looking to reach. Thanks in advance. Talk tomorrow.